My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler. Before I introduce my co-host this week, I wanted to do a quick reset. If you're new to the show, welcome. Each week we take a look at the world of restaurants and bars in Houston. First, I talk about some of the latest news with a friend of mine who's as obsessed with restaurants as I am. Next, we share some thoughts on a recent meal or two. Then I have an in-depth conversation with someone in the food world that I think you'll want to learn more about. In this case, for this week, it's Mary Kuklis. She's the owner of Creedy Kitchen. We'll talk to her coming up. If you haven't already, you may subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Spotify. Please rate and review the show to help us find more listeners. If you ever have any questions, feel free to email me, Eric, E-R-I-C, at culturemap.com, or send me a message on Instagram at Eric Sandler. Now, let me introduce my co-host this week. She's the owner of Fluff Bake Bar, Rebecca Masson. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
Oh, I'm living the dream. Just living the dream. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for doing this. Let us dive right into the news of the Let us dive right into the news of the week. Nobi's owners, Sarah and Martin Steyer, announced that they will open Nono's Family Pizza Tavern next to the Toasted Coconut there. Tiki-inspired restaurant and bar in Montrose. Nono's will serve Midwestern tavern-style pizza that's square-cut, a style that they grew to love in Chicago, which is the city they met in. And the space will feature a retro, like Gen X nostalgic design by local favorites Gin Design Group. Becky, before we talk about Nono's, let me just ask you, do you have thoughts on Nobi's and or the Toasted Coconut?
I haven't been to the Toasted Coconut except for to like drop off baked goods. I think Justin's used girlfriend was working there at the time because he was like, can you deliver this to the Toasted Coconut? Nobi's, the one time I went is delicious. I get really annoyed at the no reservation thing. I like to schedule my life. I don't know. I don't like to wait around. I'm impatient because usually when I'm hungry, I'm hungry. But it was delicious. And one day I'll go back again. Kind of excited for some tavern style pizza. I love good pizza.
In defense of Nobi's, they do take reservations now. I know in the old days they didn't.
Oh, they do now?
They do now. You're welcome back anytime.
Okay, I'll go make a reservation then. I'll do it.
Why are you excited about tavern style pizza? Tell the people.
Because I don't know what it is. I guess it's like Chicago's like deep dish, right?
Well, so for tourists, this is important. I'm glad you brought this up. For tourists, Chicago is deep dish. For Chicagoans, Chicago is like there's a thin crust, also Chicago style. And kind of throughout the Midwest, there's this square cut, like party pizza that's like cut in little squares. And so you can just kind of share it, you know, with a big group of people really easily. And that's what they're doing. You kind of find this all over the Midwest. So that's what they're doing.
I'm down for that. That sounds delicious. They're very talented people and they make tasty food. So I can't imagine that. I mean, the pizza's not going to suck. So let's go. Let's do it.
Yeah. I basically you summed up my own thoughts on this, right? Which is Nobi's is delicious. It won Restaurant of the Year in the Tastemaker Awards a couple of years ago. The Toasted Coconut is a place I really like to go to. I don't get there very often, but, you know, they have a delicious burger. They have dumplings. They have really fun cocktails. If you're really motivated, they have Quixote, their hidden little mezcal bar that they reopened and have currently closed while they kind of get Nono's off the ground. But It's a good hang, the toasted coconut. And bread has always been kind of like doughs and bread. Like, you know, there's the dilly bread at Nobi's. Like, they make the hamburger buns. It's like they're like their own Hawaiian style hamburger buns at the toasted coconut. Like, bread and dough has always been kind of what the, like a, at the core of what they do. So I have no doubt that whatever this pizza crust recipe is that Martin Thayer has been working on is going to be really good. And the, you know, it's going to have that same kind of vintage, like reel to reel soundtrack that's at Nobi's, and, you know, the cocktails at both Nobi's and the Toasted Coconut have always been really, really like thoughtful. They're balanced, they're creative, they're always pretty reasonably priced. So I'm sure that that's going to be part of No-No's. I mean, you know, the funny thing for me is this is taking the old Revelry on Richmond Stage, which I used to live close enough to walk to. And then I moved, oh, wow, you know, 2.5 years. Like, I don't regret the decision to buy a house and move out of Montrose, but I regret it just a little bit, because this would have been my local pizza spot, and it's not going to be. But it's,
well, you'll
still
just have
close
to make it.
Yeah, I'll drive. Pizza. Like, it's okay. I'll drive. I just won't be
able to. Will they deliver pizza?
Ooh, I don't think so. That is a good question that I've not had the chance to ask them. I think it's more focused on a dine-in pizza experience, which is part of why, like, they're going to have an arcade and they're going to have shuffleboard and they're going to have a big patio and all this other stuff. So I think it's more focused on dine-in, but I mean, as a pizzeria, you got to do to go, right? Like, it's got to be part of it.
You got to do good to go. I'm excited. We always can use more pizza. That's my theory on it. I love pizza.
And we're getting, like, you know, weirdly, that part of Montrose is kind of, you know, Montrose Midtown, if you expand it just a little bit. Because Beetlejuice, Chris Cusack's pizzeria on Washington Avenue, is opening a second location on Montrose,
oh, wow,
Boulevard. You know, Home Slice just opened in Midtown, next to the Breakfast Club. So weirdly, like, that's three new pizzerias within a couple miles of each other. So I would say the Montrose, whatever Montrose pizza cravings were not being satisfied by, like, you know, Love Buzz and Romano's and Star and everything else that I'm not thinking of off the top of my head, like, surely between No-No's, Beetlejuice, and Home Slice, there's something for everybody.
For sure. Absolutely. God, I haven't been to Star Pizza since I've, like, moved here. I forgot about that place.
You know, it's one of those funny ones, because, like, I grew up here, and so there are days, like, I'd say maybe 3 or 4 days a year, when the only thing in this world that I want to eat for dinner is a Joe's deep dish pizza from Star. And if you poll, like, Houstonians, like, on Facebook or Reddit, like, what's the best pizza in Houston, it pops up a lot, but it kind of flies under the radar from a media perspective, so you don't hear about it that much.
I mean, what, they got two locations that I know of, so. Well,
there's a third in Katy that you're never, ever going to go to, but it's there, I promise.
Okay.
All right, let's move on to topic number two. Sean Bermudez, the owner of places like the Burger Joint and the Taco Stand, has opened Roswell's Saloon, a space-themed bar in the former Stone's Throw space across from Anvil. Now, Becky, I know you're not a big bar goer these days, but did you have a chance to look at the pictures in the Culture Map article about Roswell's?
Oh, yeah, I looked. Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
It's ridiculous. I don't know. If I choose to go to a bar, it's either Divey or Anvil-ish, or, like, I mean, a restaurant bar, right? That's just, I mean, it just reminds me of, like, what's that? Was it Be Present or Present Company? Present Company.
Well, then, no surprise there, because Sean used to own Present Company. He sold it at the end of last year.
Yeah.
So he's got a sense for, like, what people want to look at, what they'll want to take pictures of.
Well, yeah. I mean, but you can't base your whole concept off Instagram worthy moments, right? Like, you'll get them in once, but
I don't know. It worked for Present Company.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. Maybe the 20-somethings like it. I'm old and I'm a curmudgeon. And I think it's ridiculous.
I think it's intentionally ridiculous, but I don't know. I you know, sat in the space with Sean. I interviewed him for an article on Culture Map. I thought it was fun. I don't know how often I'm going to go there. right? But, you know, it's all, it's black lights, neon, it's got all this planetary stuff. There's graphics being projected on the walls. It's a lot. It's very deliberately a lot.
Yeah,
but
very much.
In the right frame of mind, you know, as one stop, like, you know, this is not my evening destination,
right?
But as like one stop, I could definitely see it.
I mean, the cocktails look cute.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, these cocktails are always...
At least they kept the theme throughout, right?
But, yeah, that was part of the goal, right? Was to have a comprehensive theme.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll pass. But thank you. Thank you for letting us know it exists.
All in a day's work. I will say one other thing, though, which is that, you know, Sean sold Present Company.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that he's opening 2 more burger joints and 4 more taco stands, plus wow, a couple other restaurant concepts he didn't specify. I should note that the Heights locations of both the burger joint and the taco stand are really close to Fluff Bake Bar. So I just wondered if you ever eat there and if you have thoughts on them.
The burger joint has a really good Caesar salad. Like the chicken on it is, I don't know, it's cooked perfect. I can't really cook chicken very well to begin with. So I could never do that. I mean, the burgers are good. Yeah. But if I go there, I get the Caesar salad and bacon parm fry. It's all about balance, people. So they're really tasty. I went to the taco stand when they very first opened, and that was probably a mistake, and I should probably give them another try. But I, you know, there's so many other tacos out there.
I know there's a million tacos. I will say it is not, it happens. Okay. Like I'll pop into a Fluff Bake Bar and I'll pick up, you know, a couple of star-crossed lovers and a cookie or whatever specials you've got going on Saturday or Sunday. And then I'll go to the taco stand and pick up two, because it's a drive-thru.
Right.
That's so nice. I can pick up a couple of tacos and then I have lunch and dessert. And it's like, are they the best tacos? No. Are they tasty and reasonably priced and very convenient? Yes, they are all of those things. And if one of those new taco stands is closer to where I live, I will probably eat there, I don't know, once a month, maybe twice a month. Like it'll crack the rotation, because the only thing that's stopping me from eating there more often is that it's just kind of far from where I live.
No, no, I do really like their Caesar salad. It's really good.
That is good to know. That is a hidden...
I think it's under bowls, but it's funny when we do order it, everyone who's working orders Caesar. We all get Caesar salads. Very rarely do we get burgers.
All right. And then let's move on to topic number 3. Lady M, the New York City based cake bakery known for its Miller crepes that are made with like 20 layers of crepes, has opened a permanent location in the Galleria. Becky, since you're a baker, I feel obligated to ask you about this. Have you tried Lady M?
Yes. When our friend Adrian was living in New York City, we had a lady date and we went and had them. It's delicious. It's very well done. They must have a magic crepe making machine, because when I make crepe cakes, it takes me all day. They've got interesting flavors. The thing I think I like the most is it's not cloyingly sweet, right? Like it's very mild in terms of sugar, which is how I prefer things. I think the only negative is it's in the Galleria.
Yeah, I sort of wondered about that, but they've been doing kind of pop-ups in the Galleria.
Yeah.
And apparently they really like it. And I asked the CEO about, you know, why the Galleria? And he's like, well, you know, we're in this kind of luxury. We're on the border of the kind of the luxury wing. We're kind of across from the Apple store and we're near like a bank of elevators. So if all you want is to go and get a Lady M cake, you just have to figure out like which entrance to park in that takes you near the elevator. And then you can get it and then you can leave.
I know which one this is. You enter off Westheimer. It's at the light. You go all the way down to the bottom. And usually there's parking next to the banks, because next to elevator banks. And the only reason I know this is because the Apple store, before we had the one in what is that? Highland Village? Is that Highland Village? Yeah. That's the only reason I know that. But yeah, it's definitely worth going, and it's worth the price tag. It's really good. I really like it.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I really like it too, and I feel validated.
Oh, yeah.
And I will say, the nice thing about this location is they're going to have a couple of little cafe tables, so you can get a slice, and they'll sell you a cup of coffee or a cup of tea, and you can sit and have your cake, which just feels very civilized to me, to be eating this very fancy slice of cake with a warm beverage in the, you know, hoopla of the Galleria.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. You want to feel, you can feel bougie.
Yes.
Right.
And the other thing I'll say is that, you know, since they've committed to the store, they've also set up a bakery like somewhere off site to crank out all these different flavors of crepe cake.
So maybe there'll be more.
That is the goal. Yes. They're looking. And I think it wouldn't surprise me to see them in like other kind of luxurious environments that are similar to the Galleria. So, you know, wherever there's an Apple store,
wherever there's an Apple store,
pretty good candidate for a Lady M, right? So the Woodlands and Memorial City, you know, that seems kind of logical to me that there would be, those would be two possibilities.
That sounds, yeah, I get that.
And then finally, topic number four, you just attended the Hot Luck Festival in Austin this weekend. So how was Hot Luck?
Oh my God. It's like the high school reunion you want to go to. Or like, and like Al Fuego, like the Saturday event, it's like the high school cakers, right? But with really good food. It was, number one, it was cooler than it's ever been. I think it might have been in the upper 80s, maybe the super low 90s. So that was a blessing. But I don't know. It was like a whole vibe, and everybody was so excited to be there. You know, there were some new faces. I don't know. It was just those guys, Aaron Franklin, Mike Thielen, James Moody, man, they know how to throw a party. Let me tell you that.
Get to meet anyone that you had never met before that you were excited about?
Yeah. Well, okay. So Diana Mao is a pastry chef up in Minneapolis. She used to work for Gavin Kaysen, at Sable and Spoon. And God, I can't remember when we became Instagram friends, but it's been a long time coming. Aaron had reached out to me and asked for some pastry peeps, and I gave him a couple names. Well, I gave him two names with paragraphs of why I love them, and then I gave him four names. Right? So basically I'm saying I want you to pick these two. One was Diana, the other was Dana Cree from Pretty Cool Ice Cream in Chicago. So we got to meet in person. So that was super awesome. I met the guys that own Birdies in Austin, and they're super nice.
Right. And just so people know, that's a super cool wine bar and restaurant that's made some national best new restaurant lists.
Yes. And now I have an inn and I don't have to wait. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. I don't know. And then obviously seeing Aaron and Mike and James is nice, is always nice. And then just seeing everybody you haven't seen in a while. So it was festive. It was a good time. I had a really
Was there one or two of the most, do you have any particular one or two most delicious things you want to shout out?
Okay. So Ashley Christensen did this fried cheese in this blue cornmeal batter. So it was a cheesy corn dog looking thing. And she was cooking the same night as me Friday. And I was so busy, I never left my booth, but somehow got four of them. And oh my God, it was so good. I talked to her about it. She said she'd been working on this for a while and it finally came to fruition. And so she was super excited. And I was like, well, people kept bringing it to me. So it was good.
Maybe she'll serve that at Southern Smoke. She's a Southern Smoke Festival staple.
Yes, maybe. And then, so the guys from Estee had helped bring in these two restaurants from Mexico. One is in Monterey. The other one, I can't remember. I think he's close by. He was serving champacana, so I couldn't eat it. But the guy from Monterey, they're from Cara de Vaca. That's the restaurant. He did this taco all chewy. I guess that Chewy's his name. I don't know. It was a ribeye, but it was like super thin and it had, I don't know, something spicy and some avocados. And it was actually a flour tortilla. It was at El Fuego on Saturday. It was so good. I tend to not eat a lot at events just because it's just too much. So I handpick what I eat. But yeah, it was funny. I guess the guys from Suerte had drove down to Mexico to pick them up. And to pick up like the fish, because they had Baja, they had Turbo from Baja. And I guess food got confiscated. I don't know. It was this whole thing. It like something that happened at the border and things got confiscated. And I don't know. It was crazy. But they were there. I don't know that they'd ever been to an event like that. So they were kind of like, what is this? Why are there hundreds of people in my line?
Right.
It was well worth the wait. It was delicious. It was really, really good.
All right. Becky, I'm going to say that does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurants of the week. Stick around. Becky, for our restaurants of the week, I have two Italian restaurants I want to discuss with you. The first is Triola's Italian Kitchen. This is an Italian restaurant in the Heights. It's a place that's gotten a lot of hype. If you are a member of any of the Facebook food groups, especially Heights Area Foodies, people post about this restaurant constantly. They love it. We had more of a mixed experience, and we'll get into the specifics of that in just a second. But let me just ask you, because I know you own a small business, you're sensitive to, you know, all these different review platforms, and we're gonna have to say some negative things about this meal that we had. But let me just ask you, like, how much slack do you cut a restaurant when you go there and it's just like not what you expected?
I mean, I'm not going to go beat them down and go tell everyone how crappy it, like, if not, I'm not saying it was crappy, but I'm not going to, first of all, I'm not going to go review it. Second of all, if someone asks me how it was, I'll be like, oh, it was fine. Or some things were good. You know, I'm not going to like publicly bash them.
No, you'll let me.
But at the same time, like, I think our expectations were really high because of, I mean, the Heights Foodie Group is basically a Triola's fan page, right?
It has its moments where it is that. Yes, I agree.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I called you and said, let's go see what this is all about, right? I don't remember who said what, but anyways, I don't know, man. I just, will I give it another try? Maybe. Or will I just write it off? Maybe. I don't know.
All right. Let's dive into just a couple of the specifics because we did go in with high expectations. I will say, I like how kind of humble and unassuming it is. You know, it's this little tiny place and everybody's working hard. You could tell like the front of house was hustling. The valet guy was hustling. The kitchen was busy. And it was packed. I mean, you know, not that they had a ton of room, but it was a busy place.
Yes. I think the mistakes that were made were things that can be fixed, right? Like, I mean, I'll just say it. Like, what did we get? 5 dishes?
Yeah, that's right.
The mushrooms were cold. My chicken was cold. I don't know how the temperature of your ossobuco was. I thought it was hot. I think I remember seeing it steaming. It's to me, it was as if they made sure all your food was perfect. And I was just like the bystander, right?
You know, see, what's so funny is I have never been more certain that I was not recognized in like the last 5 years of dining in an early restaurant, that I was not identified as a member of the media or anyone who deserved any special treatment. Apart from whatever they give everybody else, right? I've never been more certain of that. Because the mushrooms were cold. They weren't like freezer cold, but they weren't hot.
No, they weren't hot. They probably would have been delicious if they were
hot. Would have been delicious if they were hot, and they were not. And
John cream is not good.
Right. You know, and you know, at the same time, like we had I had a shrimp appetizer that you know, again, like it wasn't cold, but it wasn't really hot enough. And it was just kind of, you know, it was kind of fussy and it didn't really land. I mean, really the, like you said, your chicken, you know, you had this like spinach chicken with vegetables and cheese sauce and it, Like, you know, it just should have been like temperature, like not spicy hot, like temperature hot. Like it should have been warmer.
Yeah. Yes. Pretty much.
And really the only dish that I thought was good, like that I would order again based on our experience, was my ossobuco. But of course it's a $60 veal shank almost. Yeah. And it comes with risotto, but not really that much risotto. It's like, give me the, like, I, you know, I want enough risotto to have like a bite of risotto with every bite of meat, roughly, or, you know, give or take. And so like, even there, it's like the, you know, like the little stuff just didn't seem, I don't know if we caught it on a bad night. I don't know if we had bad luck.
You think it's bad. You think it's me.
I do. Well, I'm going to explain why I think it's you in a second. We're coming to, because we're coming to our second restaurant, but you know, but at the same time, like I have to balance our experience with all these other raves, and it's tempting that it is to just think, well, those people don't know what they're talking about, right? Like the, you know, they have bad taste in restaurants. You know, I think that's maybe a little bit too impolite. So I will say I want to give Triola's Kitchen another shot because like I said, it's this little place and it's BYOB and people seem to love it, but it missed for us and it kind of bumped me out.
You think the reason, because it was expensive. With five dishes and we drink water, right?
Right.
Do you think that because a lot of restaurants make money off wine, because they don't have wine, they have to balance out the income? Because it was, I thought it was pricey. I'm sorry, it was.
It was. No, I mean, it was, it right. If you're BYOBing and you would have otherwise bought wine at a restaurant markup, you're coming out ahead, right? Like that's always kind of been... That's always kind of been like the key to, like, you know, Grant Cooper and Charles Clark's restaurants. It's like the food's a little bit expensive, but the wine's cheap. So if you're a wine drinker, you come out ahead.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, I, you know, I don't remember exactly what we paid, but it was like
$200 with a tip.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it was $200 with the tip. So it wasn't, it was not an inexpensive meal. And that's part of what made it so disappointing, right? Is that, you know, we paid all this money. And for that kind of money, like we could have gone to restaurants we really like. I mean, maybe not, could have gone to Blue Dorm, but we could have gone to Riel for that kind of money and had a really good meal, or La Lucha, or, you know, a bunch of other places. And that's part of what was so disappointing.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. Like you're busy. I mean, it is like elbow to elbow in there. It's not a lot of room. I mean, the service wasn't lacking, right? I think
just... No, the service was attentive. It was friendly. He had recommendations on the menu. I thought it checked all the boxes.
Yeah.
It's just the food coming out of the kitchen didn't live up to our expectations.
No. I kind of want to ask those people. No, I don't want to ask those people.
No, you don't.
I don't want to get into that.
No.
Right. I mean, it's probably worth another try. I bet this time you get recognized.
Well, especially after this podcast comes out, yeah, I probably will get recognized.
Well, and Frank came out and talked to us, but
he didn't know. He didn't know what either one of us did for a living.
If you'd ever met him before.
No. Yeah. No, and he actually asked me if he knew me from another, his former restaurant in the Memorial area that I had never been to. And when I sort of said, oh no, but we grew up going to Lasagna House, he kind of scoffed at that, which hurt my feelings a little bit. I have very fond memories of going to Lasagna House. You can't, don't make fun of my restaurants, Frank. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
And then we have another Italian restaurant to talk about. This is Bari, new in River Oaks District. It is located right across the driveway from Toulouse, the very popular French restaurant. And I'll say, like, Triola's is established, right? Triola's has been open for several months now. It's got all these great reviews. Bari had been open for a week when we went to Bari. And again, highs and lows. Not everything was quite up to our expectations. So let me just ask you, what did you think about Bari?
I'll give Triola's another chance. I'll probably never go to Bari again, just based on location and the fact that it just was meh, right?
No, I think that's right. And you know, I have, again, like I have some sympathy for Bari because, like I said, they'd only been open for a week. But on the other hand, you know, I'd been seeing people raving about it on social media, and they brought in all these influencers and all the usual stuff. And they knew, like, they definitely knew, like, this was set up through the PR firm. Like, they knew what I do for a living, and they were, you know, they were hosting us, the whole shebang. And so, like, there's some stuff that just, like, you would think wouldn't fly, right? Like, we ordered a Frito Misto appetizer with calamari and shrimp, and most of the calamari were, like, clumped together, which is just bad, like, technique, right? Like, how do you send that out of the kitchen? I mean, to me especially, but really to anybody, like, that's not really okay.
Yeah.
And it was kind of the same thing with your cacio e pepe, where the pasta
that was carbonara.
Right. Carbonara, excuse me. Sorry.
I think it was carbonara.
It was supposed to be carbonara.
Yes. It sat on the past too long, most definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, because the pasta was all clumped together.
Yeah. And it was really, I mean, I get it. You put egg in there, but it almost looked like they had put food coloring in it yellow.
Yeah, it was bright yellow.
Bland. It was really bland.
Yeah.
I think Mrs. Wilson had the dish of the night, but
yeah, your mother joined us.
Yes.
And yeah, she got the seafood risotto, and it was all good things. It was like, it was that nice, like, spreadable risotto texture. Seafood was, like, plump. The sauce was tasty. It was like she won the Bari lottery. But, like, even my veal scallopini, like, again, like, it wasn't temperature hot enough, and the frying wasn't crispy, you know, like, it's, you know, I know what that dish is supposed to taste like. It's not I mean, and that's the other thing about Bari, is it's like all this, like, really familiar, like, super classic, you know, Italian-American style dishes.
But no eggplant parm.
Right. No eggplant. Right. No eggplant parm. No chicken parm. That's where they draw the line, apparently. But you know, but it's got all this kind of familiar stuff. And so for it not to be executed properly is just a bummer. And again, like, it would have been, you know, our dinner for three with wine this time, if we had been paying for it, would have been like, you know, $200-$250. So, you know, you want that, like, if you're going to pay that kind of money.
Yeah.
Which I don't mind paying that kind of money, but I want it to be worth it.
Worth it. Yeah. The pizza wasn't bad.
No, the pizza was actually pretty good. I think the pizza was one of the better things we had.
But it's not worth going back there for me.
No, I wouldn't go back there just for pizza. But if I were going there, I would get the pizza again.
Get pizza. Yeah.
Right. Nice char on the crust. Good toppings. It was, I mean, and I'd get that risotto again. And I would get that, I'd get that mango cheesecake again.
Yeah, our donut, our little bombolini were cold.
Yeah. Anything out of the fryer at that restaurant's a no. Like, yeah. a hard pass for me until they get that thing straightened out.
I mean, maybe it is first week jitters. And, like, the fact that you said it's not like a chef-owned place. It's like an investor-owned place. So.
But they got this guy, the chef who used to work at the Hotel Grand Duca, who's, you know, a real Italian chef in an Italian restaurant, which is, I always appreciate. But we don't know if he was there or not, because, again, like, he didn't come out and say hi. So either he was super busy or he wasn't there. Right. And we didn't meet the operating partner, Tommy Nally, because he didn't come out and introduce himself either. I've seen him on TV. I didn't see him while we were there, but, you know, it's a week old. I mean, we went on a Monday night, but it's also a week old restaurant. You think he was probably around, but it's a beautiful space in a great location. So financially, it'll probably be fine. But yeah, in this, yeah, but that's every new restaurant.
Yeah.
But with all these new Italian restaurants opening up all over town, you know, my Italian restaurant dollars, if I were in that neighborhood, are either going to go to Dante's, which also just opened on Mid Lane, Brian Doak's new place, or to El Braco, which I've talked about so often on this podcast that I probably don't need to get into it. or even Numero 28, which is Italian-owned in Highland Village and kind of casual and welcoming, or Davanti, where Chef Roberto makes his great pastas. Like, you know, life's too short. Bari, I'm with you. Like, Triola's, I feel like there's something there. Like, we didn't experience it, but there's something there. Bari, probably a one and done for me.
Yeah, I second that notion. But, you know, it's like you said, the it's like Toulouse is like the new B20 Brasserie 19. So they all hang out at the bar. So maybe they'll hang out. I mean, they had a cute little bar area.
No. And in fact, I talked to a friend of mine who like had drinks at Toulouse and then went over to Barre and wasn't really feeling the dining room. So she and her girlfriend sat at the bar and and had drinks and, you know, whatever. Had a very nice time, but not for the food, for the environment.
There you go.
All right, Becky, before I let you go, what's new at Fluff Bake Bar?
It's summer, so more ice cream. I'm thinking about making a sundae or two.
I encourage this. Yes, make sundaes.
I had a sundae in Austin at Cafe Noce, and I was like, God, I miss making sundaes. So maybe keep an eye out.
All right, fluffbakebar.com. And what are you on Instagram?
At fluffbakebar, and me personally, but I am not responsible for your reactions, at Sugar Fairy.
Follow at your own risk.
Exactly.
Rebecca Madison, thank you very much.
Thank you. Oh my gosh, I missed doing this with you. It was fun.
And I'll be right back with Mary Kuklis. I am joined this week by the chef owner of Creedy Kitchen, a restaurant in West U. Mary Kuklis, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me, Eric. Excited to be here.
Thanks for doing this. You know, look, I always kind of like to start these interviews with, you know, a person's history. So tell me a little bit about how you came to the world of professional cooking.
Well, I guess I kind of always have been interested in cooking. Looking back, all of my jobs have been cooking related. So from a ski camp chef to which is essentially heating up, you know, like French toast for campers, working at a Michelin-starred restaurant in China called Bo Innovation, Alvin Leong's place. I did an internship there. And then I worked at Pondicherry for almost 10 years with Anita Dressing Honey. And really, I feel like that's where I really learned to love the whole restaurant business altogether. Of course, family has been a huge part in that too. My grandfather came over from Crete when he was 18. And we still have family there and we go and visit them. They actually have a hotel there called Gnosis Beach. And they have a nice restaurant there. And when you go to Crete my family's from Crete, Greece. When you go there with family, it's a different experience, I think. They often would take us out to, you know, local tavernas and really have kind of traditional, really local food there. And that's actually what kind of I started wanting to do a long time ago, but actually started doing it probably about 3 years ago with my catering company and then continued it with Creedy Kitchen.
All right. Well, you've provided a lovely overview for the next probably 15 or 20 minutes of what we're going to talk about. So start with Bo Innovation because it just sounds so fantastical to me. How did you wind up working at a restaurant in Hong Kong? What did you sort of take from that experience?
So my parents actually lived in Hong Kong for almost 8 years. So I went to visit them almost every summer they were there. And there's this one place we would go occasionally called Bo Innovation. And, you know, I guess we went for Christmas break. I think it was a Christmas break before or after I graduated college. And we talked kind of to the owner there about me potentially doing an internship over the summer. And that came into fruition. And so I worked there. It was quite an experience. It's molecular gastronomy. So, you know, a lot of crazy techniques going on. And they had me work kind of each station for 1 week. And I remember my... they had me working in pastry for 1 week and the pastry chef trained me for maybe 2 days. And then she was like, okay, I'm going to go on vacation. You got it. oh, by the way, the Michelin star guide is in town, so like make sure it's good. Me being terrified, but I think it turned out okay.
Yeah, it's like, people who train to be doctors, they sort of joke about see one, do one, teach one. So, you saw it for 2 days. I mean, that's plenty of time to execute at a Michelin star level, right? Like, and then I want to dive into Pondicherry a little bit because I do think that's where, if they don't know you from Creedy Kitchen, maybe people know you from your time there. How did you come to work there?
So her first restaurant, Indica, was one of my favorite restaurants in Houston. I loved it. And I actually was eating dinner there with my family. And I was there was if anyone's familiar with Indica, they probably know Rusty. He was a like mainstay server plus awesome guy that he was serving our table that evening. And I was like, you know what? Maybe I want to work here. And he goes, seriously, you need to apply. And so I actually decided to apply, and then Anita said, I don't need anyone at Indica, but I'm about to open Pondicherry, my new concept. If you're interested in working there, we can use you there. And so I started there 2 weeks before Pondicherry opened and went through all the craziness of opening any restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, it's such an interesting restaurant, in my opinion, because there were all these other high profile openings, when that development got going. Robert Del Grande had two restaurants, and there was that L.A. sushi restaurant, and they all went away, and Pondicherry indoors. And I know it's not. I mean, I know it's not your restaurant, but what do you think it is about that place that just kind of works for people? I mean.
Yeah, Anita would always, at the beginning, people would call it the hidden gem. And she's like, I don't want to be a hidden gem. I want to, be
Yeah,
out there. But
I want to be full. I want to make money. Yeah, that
yeah.
yeah.
But I mean, she's just so talented and she has so much passion and just the way she uses spices. And, I think her ability to create Indian food for all palates is unique. And I think that's what brings people back. It's just a fun space. And, the colors, the design, her aesthetic, all around is pretty amazing.
Do you have one good Anita Jaisinghani story that's podcast appropriate?
One good, let's see. I'm not sure. I'd have to think. I don't know. She's always just, I guess one thing is that, and she'll say this too, so many times she's just such a creative thing and thinker, and like she just thinks so well about ingredients that she's just shocked when other people don't think the same way as her. So, half the time she would make these recipes and not write it down and then just expect us to know it. Or she'd I remember, especially at the beginning, we would I was working 6 days a week, I think, at that point at least, and I had my one day off, and I would come in from being off and the whole kitchen would be rearranged, the whole menu would be changed. And then finally, Ajna, after her daughter Ajna, after I guess 2 months of this, changing menu, said, Anita, you have got to stop changing the menu for at least 3 months. And so she stopped for 3 months and gave us a little breather.
Obviously, as you said, you're of Greek heritage. How did you kind of come to the decision that it was time to move on from Pondicherry and that you were ready to kind of embrace that aspect of your culinary legacy?
Yeah, I mean, that had been something I've been wanting to do for a long time. And Anita knew that from the beginning. Well, I guess I maybe two years in told her, this is something I want to do. And she was super supportive of me, learning everything there is to open a restaurant. And she was, helped me do that, which was amazing. And so I guess probably the main reason for the transition is I was about to have my second child. And I don't know why I thought this, but I thought it would be a good time to open a restaurant.
I mean, that's
And
basically like having a
yeah,
third child. I mean, you
it's
basically
having
had
a third
twins.
job. Yeah, exactly. So, but the thing was, I had my second child, and then a month into after having her, COVID hit. And so I had to rethink kind of what I wanted to do. Having two kids is a little more challenging than I realized, I think. And so I started my thinking about this catering company. I don't know, in COVID, probably not the best idea, but the catering company idea morphed into a heat and eat kind of menu. And so I did, so it ended up being where people would pre-order by Sunday and then pick up Thursday. And so I did that for about 2 years while I was looking for a space for Greedy Kitchen. And then, a good space appeared and I felt like the time was right. And so then we decided to open.
All right. So when you were doing kind of the heat and eat, the catering company, was that also Greek food or was it more eclectic?
Yeah. That was Greek food, and it really helped me kind of curate what I wanted to, and it kind of made me pivot and change. Instead of doing like a full service, restaurant, I thought about doing something that was utilizing things from what I learned catering. So, a caterer doesn't cook everything from scratch when they walk into someone's home or to a place. So you have like kind of tricks where you warm up things so it's not overcooked and it's perfectly, ready to go. So for the heat and eat stuff, I thought that would be a fun thing to develop and curate. So going back to, the heat and eat part where I was doing it before in the the first 2 years before Creedy Kitchen helped me kind of hone that and decide on a bunch of dishes that I wanted to do for Creedy Kitchen. And then, while still doing catering, and then we have just like a fun little menu also.
So what did you kind of learn about like what sort of, like what people's expectations were for Greek food? Because I mean, we don't, it's just not a very common cuisine in Houston. I mean, it's kind of dominated by Nico Nico's really. I mean, it's hard to think of very many other places.
Yeah. A lot of the Greek food I found in Houston was, very delicious, but very much street food. So the kind of Greek food I'm wanting to portray is more like of a home style Greek food, kind of things that I eat with my relatives. Like, for example, when you go to Taverna in Crete, a lot of times it's like a man, an old woman, an older man, elderly man running the whole thing, and they invite you back into the kitchen, and there's like the stafado or stew of the day, and they go and say like, come, smell the stew, decide what you want. So it's a lot more like stewed meats. It's more just such fresh vegetables and beans and lentils. And I don't think really that too many people see that side of Greek food. So I kind of wanted to share a little bit of like what I see with my family and what we eat when we're there.
And then you, as you mentioned, you found a space in West U. You're in the same shopping center as Buffalo Grill. Mm-hmm. I mean, how did you sort of settle on that? Why was that the right space for you?
I wanted something small. I wanted, something that wasn't crazy big, but had a good space for a kitchen. So the layout was important. Being in that neighborhood, I thought was great with families that needed options to take home, like something healthy to take home to their family, something delicious, and something easy. So I guess, good visibility from the neighborhood and good parking also.
Yes, very good. Yes, I will affirm, having eaten there fairly recently, very good parking. So let me just ask you, I mean, you've been open for what, about 6 months now, maybe a little longer?
Yes, that's correct. About 6 months.
How's it going?
It's good. There's been some learning points. We've changed the menu a little bit, not too much. I started off with an amazing staff, which is like unheard of. I was shocked. So that really, really helped facilitate all that. And I think we're getting there.
Well, I mean, talk to me. I mean, dive in a little bit. I mean, like, you know, because you do have this unusual kind of hybrid model where you have kind of the heat need stuff that people can take to go, and then you're doing kind of, you know, like breakfast and lunch or brunch and lunch kind of service during the day. I mean, like, are people embracing both aspects of the business? Like, are they coming in to pick up stuff? Are they?
They are. I think at first people were a little confused. They were like, why is this space so small? And we kind of had to show people that yes, we have some dine-in available, but also we have like all these other options to take home. And so now it's kind of gotten into a little bit of a rhythm where people come in for brunch or lunch. And then we have a trickle of people in the afternoon picking up stuff for dinner. And then we maybe have some people come in for kind of an early dinner and wine. We have these mezze boards, which are pretty fun, where you can just kind of it's just a sampler of a lot of different things on our menu. And you know, I love a good like mezze style dining experience where you can try a bunch of different things. So the idea of these mezze boards are something you can taste, and then you know, why not add a glass of Greek wine with it and enjoy.
Yeah, no, I will say, I think that's one of the things I really enjoyed about my meal at Creedy is that we, you know, we got a couple of those boards, and so we kind of ate our way across the menu. I mean, what would you say are some of the dishes that people are really excited about?
Our chicken wrap is very popular. Spanakopita. People are really enjoying that, and that's a classic one. I just added moussaka to the menu just because everyone just keeps asking for moussaka. We had it on the heat and eat, but now we have it for dine-in as well. People are loving the chicken, and then we have we do a seasonal dip, but it's actually just been this eggplant dip called Melitza no Salata. Which is like a smoked eggplant dip, and people seem to really enjoy that, or kind of like surprised that they enjoy that. And one that I love that I don't know if everyone else does, but there's a dish called horta, which is really means just sauteed wild greens. But in Crete, like it's everywhere. It's just very simple olive oil with a little lemon juice and the Cretans attribute it to their long life. There's just like they'll be like old women picking these greens from the side of the road, and normally it's like dandelion greens and amaranth and that sort of thing. But we're trying to recreate that with some of our sides and that sort of thing. But
Well, and tell me about the wine list, because I mean, I know Greek wine, you know, has had its champions in Houston over the years, but you know, what are you kind of doing to introduce people to it?
yeah, we I am really excited about our wine list. It's some fun Greek wines. And honestly, it just because they're, you know, the grapes are grown in similar areas to where the food, you know, the herbs are. I use oregano and parsley and thyme, and you know, I feel like the wines kind of like you pick up like in some of those notes, and it complements the food really well. But yeah, I had one of my good friends, Sean McNeely, is a sommelier, and he helped me with the wine list. You know, we were very open to having people taste our wines because I feel like not everyone's super familiar with Greek wines, but we found that people trying them are just like, this is like amazing. Like, I really enjoyed this wine. We have a white Assyrtiko that's like really crisp and delicious. And there's all these different grape varietals that people don't really understand. So there's a little bit more, you know, this varietal's like a Pinot, like this varietal's like a Cab, kind of learning. But I think people are getting it. We're getting people very interested in our Greek wines. And actually, we have two wines that are not Greek on the menu, and we haven't sold very many of those at all. So I think people are
Yeah,
coming
it's a
for the
good,
Greek wines.
weirdly, that's a good sign. Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, you just have to kind of like, I mean, I'm glad you're doing that kind of handholding because I, correct me, but Greece is one of the oldest wine producing regions of the world, right? I mean, this is like one of the places where wine comes from.
Yeah, it's been around for a long time. And in Crete, I mean, you don't go when you're at a taverna in Crete, you don't like leave with it. There's a pitcher of wine, like the house wine is on the table when you sit down and you're finished the meal with raki, which is like tastes like rubbing alcohol, but it's the outside of the grape, like kind of distilled down to a very strong digestif.
And I know, you know, I know you're mostly kind of a daytime spot, but you have started doing wine dinners. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's kind of going into, I guess, my maybe eventual desire to do a fine dining restaurant. So once a month, we do these 5-course tasting menu, just having a lot of fun with it. Doing a lot of seafood and kind of dishes that I'm inspired by from my travels and that sort of thing. You know, our last one we did octopus, which I love. And I feel like I'm doing things that don't really yield well to like the heat and eat stuff. So it's an opportunity where I can do fish because I don't really want to reheat fish, you know, and so that's not on the heat meat menu, but it's on the dinners. And I love cooking fish, and Crete is such a, you know, it's an island, so there's so much seafood, so it's a chance to kind of explore that aspect of it.
And again, are they well received by your customers?
Yes, we sell out very quickly, so, and we've done a few private ones as well, which is fun.
So is that kind of where you want to go? Like, you could do them, I don't want to push you, but you know, you can do them every 2 weeks instead of once a month. Maybe grow a little.
That's definitely on the radar. It might happen. Because yeah, they're fun and we love doing them.
So, like we said, you know, you've been open for about 6 months. Kind of what are your goals? Like, where would you like to be, you know, as you kind of get towards that year mark?
Yeah, I think just, you know, making sure people are kind of, you know about us, know to come in, friendly neighborhood spot. Yeah, pick up on some caterings and, I think the monthly dinners might be bi-monthly. So, we'll see.
are you rolling out anything for summer, kind of, you know, with the weather changing and the seasons and all that?
We changed the seasonal salad to have watermelon on it. Karpuzi is the name in Greek. And so that's feta and watermelon and green beans. And we've got some really fun, I use a lot of seasonal local ingredients. So we've got some like really fun cauliflower coming in, like yellow and purple cauliflower, which I am doing a few dishes with. Yeah, but I kind of, you know, go week by week what I can find at the market, kind of dictate some of the changes in the heat and eat case, especially. And you know, the horta is always changing, like based on what I can get around to. So we just have kind of a few little things that change based what's in season.
And then since you mentioned it, I feel like I should ask, like, do you see like a more elevated sister concept in your future? I mean, is that the dream?
I think so. You know, I have young kids, so right now I really want to be around for them. I want to have dinner with them, and that's kind of part of why the hours are what they are right now. But you know, when they're teenagers and don't want to hang out with me anymore, maybe things will change. And we can do something else.
Yeah, you've got a few more years before they're tired of you. Before they think you're a moron.
I know, right?
It's coming, but you've got some time.
Yeah.
So I know obviously you're very busy with the restaurant and everything, but do you get the chance to go out with your family at all? Have you been anywhere recently that's really impressed you?
Yeah, we occasionally go to different places. I mean, let's see. I went to Blue Dorn not that long ago. That was great. We probably go at least once a month to Mala. I always love good Mala trip. And then on my days off, I go to Pondicherry a lot too, because I just miss the food. I'm so used to being there all the time.
All right. Yeah. What's the hidden gem of the Pondicherry menu that doesn't get enough attention?
Upstairs in the Bake Lab, there's something called the Hopper. It's actually, I helped Anita create it too. So maybe I'm a little biased. But It's a Sri Lankan dish, and it's kind of like this shell of made with coconut milk and rice flour, and it's almost like a bowl. And then inside, you can get a curry with a fried egg on top, and it's really good, like a coconut curry.
Well, Mary, I have to say that brings me to the end of my questions. Is there something you would like to discuss that I haven't asked you about?
I think we covered most things, but yeah.
All right. Well, before I let you go, we have to play the lightning round.
Okay.
Five easy questions, five short answers. Just say the first thing that comes to mind.
Okay.
Mary Kuklis, what is your favorite ingredient?
Olive oil.
What is the first band you saw in concert?
Oh, I think the Dixie Chicks.
What is your fast food guilty pleasure? It has to come from a restaurant with a drive-thru.
Probably honey butter chicken biscuit.
That's a great answer. What is the last TV show you binged watched?
I don't watch a lot of TV, but I think The Blacklist, maybe.
Perfect. And then finally, when you're ordering a pizza, what are your go-to toppings?
Oh, I like Joe's Pizza, spinach and garlic.
I you know, it's funny. Like, I've been eating that pizza for probably 30 something years, and there's like three nights a year when that is the only thing in the entire
That's
city
so good.
I want to eat for dinner. So good.
So good. So good.
All right. Give us the website and social media for Creedy Kitchen.
Yeah, creedykitchen.com. Social media is Creedy Kitchen. So, yeah.
All right. Pretty easy. Mary Kuklis, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
You can follow me on Instagram at Eric Sandler. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest Houston bar and restaurant news. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.